This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield. On the very same day that the war in Afghanistan began, the spin began too.
Ari Fleischer, the president's spokesman, came out in a very terse, direct statement, said we are beginning another front in our war against terrorism so that freedom can prevail over fear.
We did not ask for this mission, but we will fulfill it. The name of today's military operation is Enduring Freedom.
Freedom? Not really, but enduring? Oh, yeah.
The air campaign is in its 20th day today. The bombing campaign is causing more civilian casualties and more public protests.
Bush addressed more than 10,000 soldiers at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, home of the 101st Airborne Division.
We fight now and we will keep on fighting until our victory is complete.
The mission is not only important, it is also achievable. We can and will accomplish this mission.
So far, we believe we have been making gradual but important progress.
Progress has been made to try to advance security.
Defense Secretary Robert Gates says progress in the war with Afghanistan is exceeding his expectation.
We can say with confidence that America will complete its mission in Afghanistan, and by the end of next year, our war in Afghanistan will be over.
And though premonitions of a Vietnam-like quagmire were voiced early and often, back in 2001, then-Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld cracked jokes about the very premise.
It looked like nothing was happening. Indeed, it looked like we were in a, all together now, quagmire.
But as Washington Post investigative reporter Craig Whitlock revealed, a once-secret internal history of the war found that the quagmire was and is real. The Afghanistan Papers, as the Post is calling this monumental reporting project, was 3 years in the making. The project was initiated in the Pentagon by the Office of the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, but it took two lawsuits and untold records requests to eventually yield the 2,000 pages that document 400 interviews with generals, diplomats, aid workers, and Afghan officials. And like the Pentagon Papers that 48 years ago laid bare the government's strategic blunders and lies about Vietnam, this federal reporting project reveals the efforts of three administrations over nearly two decades to spin expensive, bloody failure into success.
For many years, both under Bush and Obama and somewhat under Trump, the generals would always stick to the same talking points. We're in a tough fight. There are challenges. We don't know how it's going to go exactly, but we're making progress. We're turning the corner. Sometimes they would say we're winning, and that contrasted just 180 degrees from what some of these same people were saying in what we call the Afghanistan Papers.
This is Major General Jeffrey Schlosser briefing the press in September 2008 after calling for reinforcements.
We are not losing it. The enemy cannot win. Even given what we have here now.
When you said you are not losing, are you saying that you are winning?
Look, the truth is that I feel like, we're making some steady progress. It's a slow win, I guess, is probably what we're accomplishing right on over here.
Slowly.
It was a laugh line even a decade ago. But if the press was skeptical, is it fair to say, Craig, that we were institutionally also kind of uncritical in passing these Pollyanna evaluations from the government along?
I think the problem is sometimes we would feel obliged to carry along the comments from people like General Schlosser as he said them. Now, usually we would include context. We would note that at the time General Schlosser was saying this, that U.S. troops were suffering a lot of casualties, that field commanders were asking for reinforcements, that bombings by the Taliban were on the increase. So I think the news media in Afghanistan and covering the Pentagon did a faithful job in chronicling the setbacks and the failures and the problems. What I think, again, is different about these Afghanistan papers is it's the people who were responsible for the policy. Finally, we're getting admission from people in charge that all those things they said all along weren't true.
It seems like one of the complications was that success was a moving target. Were we there to eradicate Al-Qaeda? Were we there to rout the Taliban, to build security infrastructure, to build democratic institutions, to fight corruption, to empower tribal leaders, to build physical infrastructure like roads and schools, encourage women's rights, wipe out the opium trade, win hearts and minds of the Afghan populace? Not so much mission creep, but like 10 different missions, some mutually exclusive.
Well, that's right. Back in 2001, there was enormous public support for President Bush's decision to retaliate for 9/11 and to extinguish the Al-Qaeda threat as best we could. That mission was largely accomplished within 6 months in Afghanistan, but we stayed, and that's when things started to go awry. The people who were in charge of the war, in charge of the policy, admit that we lost our way. How would we know when we accomplished all these other objectives? They last forever. We're never going to turn Afghanistan into Switzerland. There's no doubt that women are treated very poorly in Afghanistan, but that wasn't why we originally sent troops. And it's not realistic to say we're going to have a victory against the Taliban.
How many lives and how much treasure have been expended in 19 years tilting at these 9 or 10 windmills?
2,300 U.S. military personnel have been killed in Afghanistan, more than 20,000 wounded, more than 3,000 U.S. defense contractors have been killed, about 1,500 NATO and coalition troops have lost their lives. The Afghans have taken by far the biggest brunt of this war. 50,000, 60,000 Afghan security forces have lost their lives. The casualty numbers for the Afghan army and police are so high that the government keeps that number classified. They're worried it would be so demoralizing if they put the true numbers out. But the best estimates are that more than 160,000 people have lost their lives since 2001 due to the fighting in Afghanistan.
For only $1 trillion or more.
Or more is probably more accurate. The best estimates, we've spent close to $1 trillion on the military operations and trying to rebuild Afghanistan. Those don't take into account the indirect costs, such as VA care for our troops who came back wounded. And since there's more than 20,000 of those, we're going to be caring for those people for many, many years. The cost of the interest we had to take on the debt, the cost of intelligence operations, all these things, it's really hard to add up. But at a minimum, we've spent $1 trillion, but the real costs are going to be many times that.
We didn't just go in there killing people, although we killed a lot of people. We poured a lot of cash into Afghanistan, spread it out among tribal leaders and various kinds of infrastructure programs and government agencies. And it had the effect of taking the smoldering embers of the corrupt culture and turning it into like a 70 alarm blaze.
It did over time. President Bush tried very hard to get the United Nations and other allies to take on the task of trying to build up Afghanistan. That didn't work very well. So after a few years, the Bush administration started spending some more money because they realized that Afghanistan was such a fragile state that the Taliban could come back and take power again. And then when President Obama took office, he took the complete opposite approach of Bush, which was, we need to get the population on the side of this nascent Afghan government. So we're going to spend out the wazoo, forgive my description. People in these interviews we obtained said people back in Washington didn't care what they were spending it on as long as they could show that they had spent it. A congressional delegation came to Afghanistan and was asking how were they doing with these rebuilding projects. There was one military officer who said to the congressman, "You're asking me to spend $3 million a day in this Afghan district the size of a U.S. county. Could you do this at home?" And the congressman said, "No, of course not." And he says, "Well, you're asking me to do this in a place with mud huts and no windows." Afghanistan was never a place that had a clean, well-run government. But now with these billions and billions of dollars flowing in, the opportunities for corruption were unavoidable.
Maybe what's so powerful about your reporting is it reveals not only what we should have known, but actually did know more or less, but never seemed to lose much sleep over. Vietnam divided America. Afghanistan has not. Why?
Well, one big difference, other than the death toll and the fact that in Vietnam, Americans were being drafted, one other big difference with Afghanistan is the start of the war, there was enormous public support for it because of the memories of 9/11. And there was a reluctance to question, perhaps, the military assurances that they were making steady progress and you need to trust us on this. And this is a war that is being fought for the right reasons.
I want to go back to the process of your reporting. The documents you obtained not from a whistleblower smuggling papers or thumb drives out the back door of the Pentagon, but through the legal process.
Well, that's right. We obtained these the old-fashioned way, which is through a public records request. And this started back in August of 2016 by another old-fashioned news gathering way, which was a tip that Michael Flynn, the retired Army general, who is then attracting a lot of attention for his support of Donald Trump and his dislike of Hillary Clinton.
Donald Trump will execute the fundamental tenet of peace through strength. And there will be no apologies for our American exceptionalism or leadership standing around the world.
This tip was that General Flynn had given a long interview that had been unpublished to a government agency in which he was railing against the war in Afghanistan.
Never mind not accomplishing our mission, but the just severity of corruption in our own system, I think, is just unbelievable.
Flynn had been a very key player in the war. He served as chief of military intelligence for the U.S. coalition in Kabul. So we were interested in what he had to say.
Is this a classified?
Yes, it is.
So one piece. So is that on?
I'm turning that off.
Yeah.
Who was he telling this to?
The Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. This agency had done a special project starting in 2014 to try and understand mistakes made in Afghanistan from a policy standpoint. We heard that they had done an interview with General Flynn. We had heard it was unclassified, so we went right to the front door and knocked and asked the agency if we could have a copy of what General Flynn had said. We thought they would respond maybe a couple weeks. It started to drag out pretty quickly. We filed a Freedom of Information Act request, which, long story short, we had to file a lawsuit, and finally we obtained it, but it took a long time.
3 years. Were you being stonewalled by this agency? Were you being slow-rolled? Was there a cover-up in progress?
I don't want to use the word cover up, but there's no question this was the bureaucratic art of stonewalling and slow rolling. We had asked for these documents. They're not classified. After we asked for them under the Freedom of Information Act request, then this agency said, "Oh, well, we need to send it to other government agencies like the State Department, Defense Department, just to make sure none of these people happen to blurt out anything classified." So that took more months, and we had to file a second lawsuit. And we still don't have everything. There's another 200-plus interviews that we've been denied that have been conducted more recently, since 2017. We're optimistic we'll get those in the coming weeks and months.
Can you give me some examples of the unvarnished opinions on the cluster fail that was and is the Afghanistan occupation?
Cluster fail is a good word, and people in the military use a version of that a lot. One of the interviews that jumped out at me right away was with Lieutenant General Douglas Lute, who served as the Afghan war czar, as they called it, in the White House under Bush and Obama. He was very blunt, and he said, "We didn't know what we were doing. 2,400 lives lost. Were all those lost in vain?" Another White House official, a Navy SEAL named Jeffrey Eggers, who again served both Bush and Obama, he says, "What did we get for $1 trillion? When Osama bin Laden was killed, I thought he must be laughing in his watery grave over how much money we spent." If I could say a word about bin Laden, what he wanted was for the U.S. to get drawn into a long-running war in Afghanistan that would cost us an enormous amount of money, just like what happened to the Soviet Union. So I think Jeffrey Eggers, when he said that bin Laden was laughing in his watery grave, I don't think it's hyperbole.
Apart from the Inspector General's materials, you also got snowflakes. Tell me about snowflakes.
Donald Rumsfeld, when he was the defense secretary, didn't use email. He would dictate brief memos to a staff person, essentially barking out orders. And at the Pentagon, they became known as snowflakes. You know, imagine thousands of pieces of paper settling on your desk. And Rumsfeld literally dictated more than 70,000 of these snowflakes during his time in office.
Give me the highlights.
Just 6 months into the war, he sends a snowflake to several generals and policy aides, and he says, "We need to find a policy to stabilize Afghanistan so we can get our troops out of there. Otherwise, we're never going to get out of Afghanistan." And the last line of the snowflake was one word. It said, "Help!" Exclamation point. So even back in March of 2002, back when Rumsfeld and the Bush White House were beating their chests over how well the war was going.
"To the extent that the United States of America decides to undertake an activity, we will be capable of doing it."
Behind the scenes, Rumsfeld is worried the U.S. military was never going to be able to withdraw.
We've talked about the parallels between the Afghanistan papers and the Pentagon papers, and they're obvious. So is the irony, because the project was titled Lessons Learned. And it certainly makes clear that in the 40 years between Vietnam and Afghanistan, no lessons were learned.
Now, a double irony here is that the Inspector General did publish reports from its Lessons Learned program in Afghanistan, compilations of statistics and summaries written in a way that make you fall asleep. And they sanitized all the good stuff people were saying in these interviews. The Inspector General didn't learn its own lesson, which was, we need to be forthcoming with the truth instead of trying to whitewash it.
Greg, one last thing. Right at the outset, I called your story monumental, and it will certainly be historic. But it broke on Monday. By Tuesday, it had already disappeared from the aggregation homepages like Google News. Vanished. Now, I'd say it was swamped by impeachment, but the Peloton exercise bike commercial kerfuffle after 2 weeks was still front and center. What is happening?
Well, actually, to be honest, in the reality of the present day news cycles and short attention spans, I was surprised by how much of a chord our publication of these articles did seem to strike with readers. Now, will people tune out? Will they move on to the next shiny thing in a day? You know, yeah, I'm sure that's inevitable. But I think people won't forget this. I think this was a particular moment in time when people's perceptions of the war, which were always skeptical of what was going on in Afghanistan, I think this reinforced a lot of people's suspicions. And I think it will be hard for the public. I would think it would be very difficult for anyone in Washington to look at the war the same way and cast it in the same terms as they did.
Greg, thank you so much.
Thank you for your interest.
Greg Whitlock is an investigative reporter for The Washington Post. Coming up, the world's biggest archive of cable news, a do-it-yourself project. This is On the Media.